Welcome to a new episode of BFRR, our Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock'n'Roll podcast that explores the intersection of traditional finance, digital assets, and digital currencies, and helps you understand how digital money and assets will evolve in the future. I'm Michael Blaschke, and in today's episode, we are talking about a crucial development in institutional blockchain adoption. That is, how major corporations are beginning to embrace stablecoin payments through their existing business software. You know, one of the biggest challenges in institutional blockchain adoption has always been the gap between traditional enterprise systems and blockchain technology. Today, we're diving deep into how this gap is finally being bridged, particularly through SAP's Digital Currency Hub, which is enabling Fortune 500 companies to process stablecoin payments as seamlessly as traditional bank transfers. I am thrilled to welcome two distinguished guests who are at the forefront of this transformation. First, we have Bernhard Schweizer, head of SAP Digital Currency Hub. Bernhard brings over 3 decades of experience at SAP and is currently leading their initiative to integrate digital currency payments into enterprise systems. Before taking on this role, he spearheaded SAP's IoT initiatives and led an innovative digital healthcare startup with SAP. And also joining us is Rebecca Carvet, a leader in EY's digital asset consulting team and head of EY's CFO consulting practice in the West. With nearly 2 decades of experience across traditional finance and digital assets, Rebecca has worked with clients ranging from Goldman Sachs to Coinbase. She's been instrumental in EY's adoption of stablecoin payments, including their groundbreaking implementation of SAP's Digital Currency Hub to process payments from PayPal in fall 2024. So today's discussion couldn't be more timely. As the US government pushes for stablecoin adoption and regulatory frameworks take shape globally, we're seeing a fundamental shift in how corporations think about digital payments. We'll explore why major enterprises are preparing for stablecoin payments now, how SAP's Digital Currency Hub works under the hood, and what this means for the future of corporate finance. Our conversation will cover everything from the nuts and bolts of integrating blockchain with ERP systems to real-world implementation cases, including EY's own experience as an early adopter. We'll also look ahead to exciting developments like programmable payments and machine-to-machine transactions. Bernhard, Rebecca, welcome to BFRR. Let's start with the fundamental question. Why are enterprises suddenly taking such a serious look at stablecoin payments?
Enterprises today are frustrated. They are frustrated with expensive and slow payments, and that especially cross borders. So if you look at a typical cross-border transfer, especially for mid-sized enterprises, they pay about $20 to $50 for one simple transaction, plus it takes 3 to up to 5 days to settle abroad. And that's insane, especially if you move towards new business models. The promise of blockchain and stablecoin payments is clear. It's seamless, it's fast, it's cheap, and available 24/7. Plus, you have always full transparency through the blockchain. You anytime see where your payment resides. And that is quite appealing. And in fact, we're getting approached by customers again and again how they really can move to a more modern payment stack.
On the US side, like Bernhard said, cross-border is really the main use case. But even in the US, we actually don't have a faster payment system like the UK or Hong Kong. So even in the US, it takes 3 days to land an ACH payment. So some of the things that we're seeing that are really spurring a lot of these questions post-election in the US are the new bills that are on the table for our Congress to look at. So there's a genius bill that's putting in place clear regulatory frameworks for stablecoin. And that's really opening the door for firms that might have looked previously but were reticent to adopt this new technology. With a clear regulatory framework, we're seeing a lot more interest and appetite.
And just to add to that, Rebecca, I think the US is, of course, now getting in the forefront, while Europe has been probably a little ahead in the past few years with the MiCA regulation. We now also see much momentum in Asia Pacific. We see a Hong Kong dollar-based stablecoin emerging, issued by a very notable bank, Standard Chartered. So I think this is also a very, very exciting development. Also in the Middle East, there's lots of momentum. We're working with one entity being there, partnering with the World Economic Forum on trade tech in general, also looking for very, very advanced stable coins not only being pegged to the fiat dollar, but also being yield bearing, which I also find super interesting. So lots of momentum wherever you look in the world. I think it's really, really a hot topic, and everyone should now start thinking about how he or she, how the enterprise really can leverage those more modern rails of payment.
Yeah, we've seen so much global adoption over the last decade plus, but a lot of it's been retail. And when you go to these large global banking conferences like Sibos, for example, blockchain payments has been a discussion for quite some time. We think one of the game changers, and why haven't corporates adopted this already? There's a few reasons. Some of that is clear regulation in global frameworks. So like Bernard mentioned, where we've seen more corporate adoption, it's been in jurisdictions like Singapore, where the MAS has put in place more clear frameworks. The other piece is just that typical inertia that you find in large institutions where automation is key. Processing these types of things manually is not an option. So having the appropriate controls and back office technology is a key piece of the why for adoption with corporates. I think that's where we're seeing this is the perfect time for firms to take a look at what their stablecoin or digital asset strategy might be. And this is the time to be able to evaluate what does it mean for them globally.
So, and I think this is clear now for everyone, you need to get started. The question is, where do I start? How do I really kind of get on that blockchain stablecoin bandwagon for payments? And of course, one thing is clear. You have an established infrastructure, a finance system, an ERP system. You have sometimes payment factories that are quite efficiently processing the stuff with all the downsides of being slow and being, depending on the payment destination you take, quite expensive. Now, you need to not kind of throw everything away. You need to tie that into your core ERP system, have a kind of seamless process. And we always use that notion of a payment rail, and it's just like another payment rail where you can decide with supplier A, I set via a traditional payment rail, and with supplier B in a certain country, there's probably a little bit more of a difficult corridor, I just go on the other payment rail. And that should be as easy as choosing a train or choosing a bus.
Yeah, thank you, Bernard. Thank you, Rebecca. It's so cool to have both these perspectives here. The perspective of the software vendor who actually brings, connects stablecoin payments with contemporary business processes, particular in that perspective, SAP, but also an early adopter, that is EY. And yeah, with that, we kind of deeply went into why the world needs it, why the world needs stablecoin payments that run in traditional business processes. And yeah, from what I got is that the reality of today's cross-border payments is dark. They are slow, they're expensive, they are opaque. But we're seeing now a major shift. The US government is actively pushing for stablecoin adoption and developing regulatory frameworks, positioning stablecoins as a modern alternative to traditional ACH and check payments. And this isn't just a US phenomenon. Regions like the UAE are partnering with the World Economic Forum on similar initiatives. So the message for enterprises out there is clear. Prepare for stablecoin payments now. However, there's a critical challenge. Integrating these new payment rails into existing corporate processes isn't simple, but gladly SAP and EY are working on it. So that's where solutions like SAP's Digital Currency Hub come in. And probably that's a good point to start talking about what it actually is. What are stablecoin payments in business processes? What is SAP's Digital Currency Hub? So Bernhard, since you are the product owner of this very beautiful piece of software, maybe you can give us a glimpse into what SAP's Digital Currency Hub is.
Yeah, in very simple terms, it's your bridge between the blockchain and the ERP system. Not more and not less, but it fundamentally changes the way you can pay. Now, let's take a very brief look at the process. You do not need to change your underlying ERP process. So you book an invoice, you do a payment run. However, what you have done, you have switched the means of payment on the invoice level, on the business partner level, advising the payment run to create a payment file for digital currency payments and for stablecoin payments. And now, rather than sending that file to a bank that goes to Digital Currency Hub, we pass it, basically understand to whom to pay, which stablecoin to use, on which network to settle, And then we either put that as a genuine blockchain transaction on the blockchain for validation, or we interact with a custody service provider, such as a Coinbase or any other big custody provider, and forward it to the custody provider for execution of the transfer on the blockchain. So not much of a change on the ERP side, just kind of taking the very same formatted document, passing it to our new solution. We basically then make the transformation from ERP data to a language that is understandable either by a custody provider or by the blockchain, execute the transaction on the blockchain, and subsequently, of course, monitor the blockchain for execution and feed that data back into the ERP system for reconciliation. And it's a pretty simple, a pretty straightforward process, and the magic happens basically behind the scenes.
And I think this is key to the point on Fortune 500s and adoption, and why haven't we seen more adoption previously? This tech has been around for a while. It's the pieces of the process and the tech being in place that create a lot of reticence with CFOs and treasurers. There are very specific controls that have to be in place, especially for companies that file publicly. And for folks in the back office to try to learn a new technology, be able to implement it in their back office, and then potentially work in a system or a technology that's not where they live and work every day. For a lot of these firms, they are living and working in SAP's technology, whether that's the ECC ERP or the new S/4HANA ERP. So having that be embedded and a part of the typical process, we see as a key innovation enabler, helping to really move forward change and make it much easier for folks in the back office to be able to explore this technology within things they're very familiar with already. Some of the things that from the EY side, that's kind of maybe us as an enabler and working with our clients to help them adopt this technology. EY got involved in this space in 2014, and it was because our clients were involved in this space. We had early Bitcoin miners that needed tax advice. That evolved to EY supporting audits. There's a lot of firms that were doing some trading back in the day. So 2015, 2016, we had audit clients that we needed to support spinning up our own independent nodes to really have that appropriate independent audit function where you're not paper ticking and tying, you're actually running it on the blockchain. We've evolved that practice into everything from audit, tax, to advising and consulting alongside products like DCH, where I think a lot of what we're seeing in this space is interest, not just from corporates and large multinationals in the stablecoin space, but also traditional finance. So you're seeing firms offering similar services to Coinbase. Coinbase can be an institutional custodian, and they are EY's institutional custodian for digital assets. But firms like Bank of New York Mellon, Fidelity, and others also have these types of solutions. Standard Chartered that Bernard mentioned as well. We're seeing a lot of adoption both in the enablement space as well as in the firms that are looking to take advantage of this new technology.
Bernard, to what extent does the digital currency app have bankish features, or to what extent can it be perceived as a bankish? I would assume that corporate treasurers expect the SAP digital currency hub to be, if you will, bankish, that is robust compliance, custodial services, familiar workflows. Is that the case?
It is the case. And bankish, I really is a term I like very much, because it shows it's not crypto, it's not Bitcoin, it's not something nerdy, it's something real, it's something solid. And this is why I think bankish, the term you coined, Michael, is a great one. And indeed, the True Currency Hub makes stablecoin transfers pretty bankish, actually. So we basically hide the complexity of the crypto world behind a facade of very well-known formats, such as a standard account statement type CMT 053, if you're very familiar with the kind of notation of that. So it really kind of seamlessly integrates into your process like any kind of bank transfer would. So while you do upload a bank statement, now you upload a bank statement for your crypto transfers, for your stablecoin transfers. And a couple of points are interesting to note. First is, it's interesting to watch how the valuation of stablecoins will turn out under US GAAP. So under IFRS, we can treat it as cash equivalent, which I think is a very, very strong statement, because that basically means a stablecoin is cash, and that makes the treatment also in accounting quite simple. And I think this is also fundamented by MiCA, which requires issuer to redeem stablecoins always one-to-one. So let's see how that turns out in the US. And with a very crypto-friendly administration, I think we could also see very favorable conditions for stablecoins. So that is one. I think point two is, if you talk to our clients, they do get excited about it. And the first question they ask is, do you have a list of suppliers I can pay with stablecoins? And that's the hard part, right? It's you need to have a network. And if you have a network, it's beneficial for everyone. If you're the first one, it's difficult. And I'd love to compare that with the early days of cell phones. So if you have the first cell phone and you cannot call a landline, I mean, you can be proud and you can show your cell phone, but it's plainly useless. So that interoperability is very, very important. And we are starting to work with financial service providers, and Rebecca has named a few of them, to basically ensure that you can receive a stablecoin payment, get it automatically redeemed into the traditional, into the fiat currency, and transfer to your bank account. So with that, you basically hide the complexity of assessing yourself, putting yourself on spot with stablecoins, with crypto, with all the likes. You even don't see it. You just have a kind of entry point, which is a wallet address, and boom, you receive fiat in a very, very well-known format. And this is the kind of interoperability I do believe we need at the start. So it's like a cell phone calling a landline. It's like a payer making a stablecoin transfer and the counterparty, the payee, receiving just the fiat currency. And if we look a little bit ahead, 2 years, 3 years, probably 5 years, then who will use still a landline? I mean, today I make a sell-sell call, right? And this is what we will see. We will see people really running on stable coins. Maybe I, of course, pay my stable coin. The counterpart is accepting the stable coins. We get into that vicious circle. So I get it. I send it. And eventually I go into new and more modern instruments like tokenized money market fund to instantaneously swap it into investment instruments. So this is the kind of journey we see. And I think the starting point is always the hard part if you build that ecosystem. But with all the regulatory tailwind that we are getting, I think we are really kind of are able to take that market and really bring it forward, bring our customers forward to a more modern payment rail.
Bravo. So with that, we are deeply into the question what SAP's Digital Currency Hub actually is. I try to summarize what I understood from your answer. So to me, the Digital Currency Hub addresses a fundamental need in enterprise blockchain adoption, that is connecting traditional ERP systems with stablecoin-based payments. And the key insight for me is that enterprises don't want to completely overhaul their existing payment processes. They want blockchain integration that feels familiar and secure and, as I proposed, bankish. Yeah, so maybe to our listeners, think of it as a bridge between two worlds. On one side, you have traditional enterprise systems and processes that companies have relied on for decades. On the other, you have blockchain networks and digital currencies, and the Digital Currency Hub connects these two worlds while maintaining these bankish features that corporate treasurers expect. Again, robust compliance, custodial services, familiar workflows. What I'm now asking myself is, how does it work? Can you give a specific example, maybe Bernhard and or Rebecca, as someone who has implemented this solution at EY, could you walk us through how this works in practice?
Maybe what real quick, before we jump into like how it works, the how you get started piece, I can cover quickly as well. So in addition to helping clients adopt this like PayPal, we also are adopting it. And I think one thing that's very useful to mention up front to people that understand ERPs, when you hear ERP implementation, I think it strikes fear into the heart of any CFO or finance transformation lead, because typically it's very long and complicated. So I want to clarify up front, when we talk about Digital Currency Hub, like Bernhard said, this is a bridge. And the implementation timeframe, the requirements timeframe, the testing timeframe, when we've put this in place, is less than a month. So these are things that are relatively straightforward to adopt, and it's intentionally light. There's not some sort of multi-year timeframe to be able to take this journey. If anything, the most complex part is getting that support and buy-in from internal executives, reviewing your policies, making sure you've got the appropriate accounting policies and controls in place. But those are things that are, this is a matter of weeks, not a very long timeframe. So maybe with that, Bernhard, you can talk about how this actually comes together.
Yeah, no, great. And I think very important, Rebecca, what you mentioned, it's really kind of rather easy to get started, to implement it. And with helping hands such as EY, I think you are really kind of easy and well prepared for takeoff. And the customer we can talk about actually is PayPal. PayPal was the payer EY and Rebecca will give a little color on that, is the payee. And basically, what did we do? We basically did PayPal's ECC's 2003, kind of not the very, very latest. They are not yet on S4. So we were taking ECC system, we're enhancing it, we're seamlessly connecting to our digital currency hub instance that we basically provisioned to PayPal. And I think that went very, very smooth. And then basically, they, as I said, they book the invoice, they do the payment run, they connect by an API to the digital currency hub that then subsequently forwards the formatted blockchain information to the custodian to execute the transaction. Then it's sitting on the blockchain and now basically waiting for EY to pick it up and recognize the payment in their books.
And then on the EY side, our involved parties, CFO, treasurer, and treasury operations, as well as on our side, the teams that are actually sending out the invoices. So when we invoice PayPal, one of the very basic business processes is making sure you're not putting wire instructions on the invoice. Obviously, this was a very POC type initiative, so we're talking frequently with them about it. But clear and basic terms and conditions, you're using a blockchain wallet address as opposed to a bank location. So you've got, you know, your routing number and your bank account number. It's just different. It's not this bankish piece of it, like Bernard said, are pieces that can be integrated into the solution. As we receive the payment, one of the things that's also very interesting as we look forward, matching payments is a big challenge for most corporates. So things like your purchase order number and embedding metadata into a blockchain-based payment. The best thing about stablecoins is that they're programmable. So there's a great potential in the future to look at what type of metadata would help you make this more of an STP process where you're reconciling your accruals versus your payments received. We see that as, you know, a fast follow in the coming years as firms have more adoption. And to Bernard's point, landing the stablecoin is no issue in our Coinbase account. But ideally, we'd love to have a use where we would be paying someone else in stablecoin. And as this ecosystem grows, looking at other innovators in this economy, Google was another participant that was also paid by PayPal right around the same time. So for firms where you can start to think about the flywheel of being able to have payers and receivers on multiple legs of a transaction, and the stablecoin just being something that's a typical use case that sits in your treasury earning yield, just like any other asset.
I think Rebecca made a very important point. The pure money movement is rather simple, but blockchain native ERC-20 tokens don't permit to send information. So it's just kind of a sending address, a receiving address, and the amount that you do transfer. And I think the magic needs to happen behind the scenes to really make sure that you also do understand who in clear text is sending you the money and what the money has been sent for. So basically understanding the context information from the business perspective, such as which invoice is going to be paid. And only if you have that information, you really can reconcile it automatically and appropriately in your ERP system. And this is exactly what Digital Currency Hub will offer in the future, what we are currently working on.
Okay, and with that, we are deeply in the how. How does it actually work? We understood a bit the process from the ERP perspective. We deep dived into the customer case that is PayPal paying EY. Can you maybe elaborate a bit on the challenges in setting up this setup to make this PayPal to EY transaction? So were there difficulties involved technologically or on the business process side, or was it super smooth and easy?
Yeah, I think that's what I highlighted a little bit at the beginning. It's more simple than you'd think. And I think that's also a byproduct of, you know, this is a proof of concept. This is an MVP. But as you think about some of the future potential, there's a lot more interesting business process that could be enabled. There's AI use cases that can be enabled. Today in a treasury function, you're essentially using maybe one of two, but there's usually not, you know, a whole slew of banking partners that you would have onboarded as a global corporate. There's not a marketplace that you say, you know, which bank is giving me the best rate to land money from here to here, whether it's the cost of the transaction itself or the FX and, you know, how many bips you're paying on either side. How long will it take? Will it take me 3 days? Will it take me 7 days? Because they have to use a different correspondent bank partner to actually land it. If I had a dashboard of that and I could, as a treasurer, choose how I am scheduling these payments and picking the best rates for me, Those are things that are available. Marketplace is a concept that's been around for decades, but it doesn't exist in this space yet. And it certainly doesn't exist in the tools and tech that treasurers work in every day. You can think theoretically, you know, with AI really coming into play in the finance function in the next couple of years, how a lot of that can be automated. Why would I ever choose something that takes more time or is more expensive? As long as you've risk diligence these providers and you feel that you trust the chain and the asset, these are things that can be automated in the future and really programmed. I think that's something that we're excited about as we look forward.
Yeah, and probably add a little bit to that programmability. So the listeners might ask, programmability sounds like a great concept, but probably first sounds a little bit abstract. So it's a little bit use cases, what you could do with programmability. And I just want to dive into two use cases, which I find quite interesting. So if you as a vendor probably run a hardware and software business and sell stuff combined, you probably do have two different legal entities, one being the software entity, one being the hardware entity, but you bundle all that together, you bring it to the client under one price, under one offer. And of course, you do know how to split the revenues. Now, with programmability, you basically could do a split payment. So you receive money and you automatically distribute it, not once it's hitting your accounts, but right within that kind of payment chain between payer and payee, you could automatically split it and send whatever, 20% to the software business, 80% to the hardware business, or in the other direction. So I think this is one quite interesting use case. Another use case where programmability is quite handy if there's a lack of trust between payer and payee. And this was a use case that was brought to us by some mid-sized enterprises in global trade. It was actually a company that was importing and exporting goods. And they said, we have trade with the Far East. And typically, our business partner asks for advance payments. And I hate advance payments because I'm not doing too much business with them. And I don't trust them that they will deliver in quality and time. Now, the counterpart is the very same argument. I didn't do much business in the past, so I don't trust that the party I deliver to will pay. And the answer is quite simple. In stablecoins, in the blockchain world, you can basically send money, your stablecoins, into a wallet. You can block it. The counterparty can basically see the money is there. It's blocked, so there is liquidity. And it's getting transferred once the good is delivered. So an escrow type of setup, basically, in an automated fashion, which I think has also lots of value. So what, in essence, we will see is we will see smart contracts, which is basically technically, in technical words, the means to execute programmability, will be there like Lego blocks, and you can just plug them into that kind of payment stream, into that payment rail, and do the magic. And I imagine, and I think Rebecca nicely has touched upon that kind of notion of an app store, I would see smart contracts, something like an application, like being available in apps to probably in a smart contract store, so that you simply can pick them and plug them on the blockchain, and by that configure your payment process outside the bank, outside the ERP system, just based on the blockchain, and do all the magic such as escrow payments, split payments, and whatever you could think of.
Yeah, I think if we look to the DeFi space, you see a lot of this innovation happening already, retail and retail trading and retail lending and payments. So there's so many amazing use cases in this space, but corporates are usually the last to adopt. So I think it'll be great to see as we move forward, more solidified rules and some of the next steps that our large global corporations will take, because these are going to be big movers into this space in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and I guess the interesting piece is many things need to come together. And I think Rebecca has nicely said what all needs to come together. There needs to be the willingness and the openness on the enterprise's side. One. Two, there needs to be the regulatory guardrails, because large corporates are shying away from a space that is not really regulated, not understood, where it can be e-compliant just by accident. So this is what they hate. So this is point two, regulatory guardrails. And then point three, I think you need to have the infrastructure in place, not only at the very basic terms, the blockchains, they are there for ages. Not only the stable coins, they're also there since quite a long time, but also the connectivity layer between your ERP system and the blockchain, which we are currently building. So that needs to be there. And just one layer on top, which I would see emerging probably in the next 2 to 3 years, is that kind of set of smart contracts that you then can plug on that kind of infrastructure layer that we are building, just to assemble your very own, your very specific chain of programs of what needs to happen with a payment.
I love how we seamlessly moved from simple B2B transactions and how they work to your look into the future. From what I understood, the future of enterprise payments extends far beyond the simple transfers you already settled. The next frontier, in my understanding, then is programmable payments through smart contracts. But we're already seeing exciting use cases emerge, like instant payments for freelancers or transparent aid disbursements or machine-to-machine transactions. Can you maybe elaborate on how specifically these use cases are already on the roadmap of the digital currency hub? So are they specifically captured in the backlog and being actively worked upon? Or what is kind of the state of work for that very product?
Yeah, let's pick up a couple of those use cases that you've been mentioning, Michael. So first one, probably freelance payments. Freelance payments thing is pretty simple as a matter of fact. So if you work with vendor management solutions such as SAP Fieldglass, you basically do all the recording. Fieldglass then forwards the payment instructions to the ERP system, and then it's pretty much the same like a B2B invoice payment for freelancer payment. Again, you would select the means of payment as being digital currency, stable coins. That very same file would be produced through the ERP system, would be sent to us, and we would basically execute it just as any other B2B payment. So if you're ready for that, we are ready. It's already there. So we can take that one.
Yeah, and in that space, I would maybe just add gig workers, and it's maybe more of a US-centric framing, but you know, Uber, DoorDash, Lyft, Instacart, there are so many gig workers in the economy, and a lot of people that are in the gig work space actually can really benefit from more from getting their money faster. So the typical payroll cycle, being paid once a month, in the most innovative gig worker type payouts, we see firms like DoorDash, for example, do biweekly and potentially may offer weekly, and the Dashers may pay a little more for that. But imagine every time you complete your gig, you get paid. That's a concept that doesn't exist in payroll and payroll systems today, or even, you know, the Stripe platform that facilitates a lot of the payouts for these firms. So Stripe getting into this space is also very fascinating in terms of how programmable payments and frequency of payments can make a change in the type of people that come and work and do the gigs for your firm, in retaining them, in motivating them, and in providing them their money faster, which is in a lot of cases what they're looking for through that gig.
So for a second, let's stick to the simple B2B payment that is, as I get it at the moment, the focus. Who in any given enterprise is supposed to ask for it? So who's your buying center, if you will? Whom would you wish for raising the hand and asking for money to get the digital currency hub in any given enterprise?
So it depends. the teams that are most heavily involved and that have the most to gain are, you know, at the very top, the executive office, because there's ROI and bottom line value here. So to build that business case, usually it's a treasurer and a CFO, but generally we don't see them banging the table for this because generally folks in that function are a bit more risk averse. So usually what we see is there's an innovation lead or a change lead that is particularly passionate about this topic that helps to work to get teams on board, to educate them about the topic if it's something that's confusing for folks. And it's really a joint effort across multiple different parties in the organization. I think we've seen that, you know, PayPal, this is a part of their core business, but even within PayPal, there are many different parties that have to agree, support, implement, and understand the use case to be able to take it forward. Within EY, for us, it was Treasury and CFO, but it was because our clients are asking to pay us in stablecoin that we say, you know what, I'm passionate about this. My client wants to do it. I'm going to help my own firm adopt this. We saw the same thing at Google.
So whoever the buying center is, and in my understanding, it would be typically a treasurer because treasurers want to increase the efficiency of capital flow, who would love to adopt new technology to improve the treasury function. Let's assume for a moment that treasurers are the key buying center. What's your call to action, Rebecca and Bernhard? What do you want enterprises and treasurers to do now?
I think it's looking at your business case. So for a treasurer, it's looking at things like how much money are you sending cross-border and how frequently and to what geolocations? How much are you paying for each of those? Not the fee for the wire, but the spread on the FX and the time it takes to land it. And in that time, you are not collecting float or yield. So putting together that case, those aren't typically numbers that are very transparent. Even within our own organization, you know, asking our teams, they know they send payments, they know how much they sent, but someone else on the other side is dealing with how much landed. And the quantification of that, even just for specific payment corridors, is not uncomplicated. So I think having treasury teams that are savvy and the treasury ops folks that can really pull those numbers together to say, here's how much we pay today. Then the easy question is, how much would that cost with a stablecoin? And how much could I save? Is that worth me exploring a POC? In every case we've seen where people look at the numbers, it's 100% yes, it's worth it. It's getting to those first numbers and creating that business case that's the call to action for the folks in the treasury and finance function.
And I think that nicely complements with what the business IT people need to do. So they need to do the due diligence. So how does my ERP system look like today? Not everyone is, of course, an SAP. Who do I need to connect my finances into the blockchain? That could be us. That could be Digital Currency Hub. And then also, who are the partners I need in such a scenario? So who could implement the system? Companies such as EY come, of course, into mind. But also, who's the custodian I wanted to use? How do I onboard with the custodian? What's the global coverage of the custodian? So basically understanding the stablecoin ecosystem, understanding your technical footprint, and prepare the technical readiness to being able to execute once the CFO understands the business case and wants to go for it. So prep on the business case side, prep on the tech side, and understand the environment, understand the partners you wanted to work with.
So Bernhard and Rebecca, thank you so much for this fascinating deep dive into enterprise blockchain adoption. I love the topic because on the one hand, I work at SAP. So here, transparency disclosure, I should have brought it at the beginning. Maybe I'm going to record something to put it in the beginning. But anyway, I love the topic because, yeah, on the one hand, I work on cloud ERP IT architecture. So this is kind of the old world. And I love the new world of institutional crypto and blockchain adoption. And your insights into SAP's Digital Currency Hub really highlight how far we've actually come from the early days of crypto. I mean, if you would have told me 10 years ago that major software vendors would create products, that companies like PayPal and EY would settle payments using stablecoins, I would not have believed it. Yeah, and here we go. We're now seeing major enterprises like EY not just experimenting with blockchain, but actually accepting stablecoin payments through established platforms like PayPal. And what strikes me most from the conversation we just had is how practical and business-focused this implementation is and how far we've come with that practicality. So it's not about the crypto hype anymore. It's about solving real payment friction points while keeping the familiar workflows that enterprises depend on. So for our listeners who want to learn more, you can find Bernhard at SAP and Rebecca at EY. Contact information will be in the show notes, but probably a question to both of you. Where should interested listeners ideally contact you? Where can we find you?
Rebecca Carvat at EY.com, or you can find me on Twitter or LinkedIn.
Bernhard Schweitzer at SAP.com. And of course, you can find me on LinkedIn as well.
All right. This is BFRR. Thanks for listening through this episode, for making it to the end. We're signing off, wishing you a great week. Thank you, Bernhard, Rebecca. And if there are any final words you want to address, please go ahead.
Thanks for having us. Excited about this new frontier in stablecoin.
Great pleasure, and waiting to engage with you and for your feedback.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.